James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? In my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Give a countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
Fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. This is the Guy James Show, coming to you from the beautiful blue waters and sandy beaches of Southwest Florida. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. We'll be with you for the next 2 hours and hopefully keep you entertained and informed of political events going on in the country, maybe other, a couple of other things as well. How you doing today? Still having a little bit of a cool spell here in Southwest Florida. I think it's cool around the country in several places, so it was uncharacteristically cool last night by about 10 degrees here, so all the snowbirds that are here, they're packing up and going home for Easter. So pretty soon the campgrounds and the motels and hotels and highways and movies and restaurants and everything else here will be empty. In one way, that's good. In another way, it is not. This is the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network, the Horn, as we affectionately call it. And we hope to have some interesting stuff for you today amongst our topics. I want to say that I'm very, very proud of our state of Florida here right now, number one. And, of course, I'm saying that with a little bit of tongue-in-cheek. There's a huge farm. All of a sudden, the name escapes me. I mean huge. Babcock Farms east of here. Northeast of where we are here just a bit. Probably you could drive there in 45 minutes, maybe something like that. It's a monstrous size farm. Babcock Ranch is what they call it. And they announced today that they're going to build a $400 million solar energy city out there. Florida Power and Light is putting it in. We're all going to have to pay like 20 cents a month extra on our electric bill, which I will gladly do. That should bring lots of jobs to build this thing, a $400 million project, and they've just announced it today. This will be the only solar energy farm of its type, solar energy city of its type in the entire world for now. And what better place to do it than in the Sunshine State? So that should be very interesting, and we're happy to hear that news. Also, another reason I'm so proud of our state of Florida today, Broward County. Broward County, that's over where Miami is, you know, Miami and Fort Lauderdale area and all that, is now considered the number one county in the United States for dispatching pain pills, much of it illegal. It was reported in the Miami Herald that Broward County is now the epicenter of a prescription drug epidemic that is rapidly spreading across the entire eastern United States. In the second half of last year alone, Broward County doctors dispensed 6.5 million oxycodone pills. And I would guess that, you know, Russia probably got about half of those, wouldn't you think? I mean, he was taking them by the handful. So anyway, that's a bunch of pills that's taking place here in Florida. And as Ben rightly points out on the chat room, and by the way, join us on the chat room at Head On Radio Network, being a Republican is painful, so that's probably why, particularly right now. that's a good one. I see Sophie's bringing up on the chat room said she didn't know that Henry Ford and Thomas Edison had winter homes in Fort Myers. They say sure did. And let me tell you, one of the most interesting places that you can ever see in Southwest Florida is the Thomas Edison home. It's got a banyan tree down there. I think it's a banyan tree that I think is the largest one in the Western Hemisphere, a monstrous size tree. And they just got done refurbing the whole place. And, yes, Henry Ford hung out there. Thomas Edison, Warren G. Harding, a lot of the notables. That was a gang, Harvey Firestone. And they hung out in this area. They also, I want to point out, that particular gang, and it was a group of guys that got together rather often, they often gathered in Marion, Ohio. Marion, Ohio was the home of Warren G. Harding, and there was a place there called, two places where they gathered. One of them called the Strelitz Mansion in Marion that I remember, and the other one was, they were kind of a rat pack in those days. And as the story goes, Henry Ford in Marion, Ohio, one night was visiting with Warren G. Harding and Harvey Firestone, and he went for a walk. And he got downtown Marion and was a bit lost, and it was late, and so he walked into the hotel, the Marion Hotel, to get a room to get a nap, to take it easy for the evening, and probably just crash because he didn't want to walk all the way back out to the southeastern end of Marion where they were staying. And so the desk clerk gave him a hard time because he didn't have any luggage and all that, and turned Henry Ford away. And so the story goes that Henry Ford said, "I'll have your job." And the next day he bought the hotel, fired the guy, and then sold the hotel. That's the story. I don't know whether it's an old wives' tale or not, but I've heard it all my life, being brought up near that area. 866-546-5254. If you'd like to join the program, I'm going to ask that you hold off on your calls for a few minutes anyway. I'm going to also ask you to bear with me. I've got something I'd like to say today, and some of you are probably going to turn the show off, either during what I'm going to say or immediately afterwards. I don't know which. So be prepared for that. I know I will probably offend some people. I'm in the mood today. I really don't care. I don't want to offend the wrong people, of course. I want to thank those who have been faithful to the program over the years. I'm very grateful for that. And really and truly, I had a note here or something I wanted to be sure and tell you before the program started today. I guess I lost it. I've gotten to the point of, I'm trying to figure out what I'm missing here. This week we've talked about the economy, my predictions about it and the effects of it upon the working men and women of this nation. And I've talked about some disappointments I have with President Obama. I've talked about the issues, the Republicans just say no, you know, just say no policy on everything. I went into detail about Ed Schultz and the slimy way that he got to where he is and the utter disregard by the Democrat power elite toward liberal radio. And I've talked about how there may not be a viable audience for liberal radio because of the diversity involved in the liberal community. And because of that, it's like trying to herd a bunch of ducks, unlike the Republicans who march in lockstep. And I'm not saying that's a good thing. And the response to all of this, to everything that I've had to say this week, has been practically nothing. A couple of calls, not one single email about anything I've had to say. Really and truly, the point I'm getting at, you got to try and do a talk show and not get any response. This is probably a bitch session by Guy James, but so be it. And when you do that, you're a talk show host, and you have a few days like that, you might as well get in front of a mirror and talk to yourself. Because believe me, it is not satisfying. It is not fun. It is not easy. And that kind of response doesn't make you want to do it anymore. And that's where I'm at here. You want to know what I'm talking about? It's easy to figure out what I'm talking about. Just go to Ben's WhiteRoseSociety.org site and take a look at the list of shows that have been canceled. And you know why most of them were canceled? You know why? Because you can't sit in a studio all day long preparing for a show, then do a couple of hours and end up talking to yourself and then have the desire to do it again the next day. Here's how it works. The host has to energize the audience, and the audience needs to help energize the host. And it has to be a two-way street. And what it boils down to, if I wanted to preach for 2 hours in the afternoon, 3 days a week, I'd get myself a soapbox and head for some busy street corner in New York City. I could preach my ass off and probably get a hell of a lot more response than I'm getting right now. My aim here is not now, nor has it ever been, to promote myself. It's to promote the issues related to you, to your family, to our nation, and to our country's well-being. And if I don't get any feedback, then I have to believe the audience, for the most part, really just doesn't give a damn. It's all just a social gathering in a chat room or in a phone call to hear your own voice on the radio. In some cases, that's all it is. And you can call this a lecture if you want, but I'm seriously concerned that we're losing the media war. That's no secret to you. And almost nobody is doing anything meaningful about it. On the left, that is. That's why I raised the question the other day about Ed Schultz carrying the banner for the left as the most listened to radio host, and now with a TV show. Obviously, not enough people on the left really give a damn, or they would have flooded MSNBC with phone calls and asked them just what the hell kind of a joke is it to have someone who was hard right all of his adult life, right up to the point where he got a pocket full of cash, to change his tune. Now carrying the banner for the left. I happened to tune into the Rusty Humphrey show the other day. I don't often listen to that, but it was by accident. You know Rusty Humphrey. He's a hardcore syndicated right-winger. He was talking on his show the other evening about what a joke this is, having a guy that Humphrey knows well, knows him, and knows he's not a lefty, representing the liberal community and people sucking it up. Humphrey was having a really good laugh over that, and I don't blame him. It is funny if you're on the right and you look at that situation. But the apathy by the left concerning the media is just stunning to me. It's appalling. And it's unconscionable. It's ceding the media to the other side, ultimately, and in doing that, it'll cede the political arena to him, because he who controls the media will win out in the end. So the question for me, and the reason for starting this little talk in the first place, is where do we go from here? Funding is dried up to the point where it won't pay for the ink in the studio printers anymore. And that's to say nothing about the other office supplies, phone bills, internet bills, and the upkeep of expensive equipment. It isn't working. And I'm discouraged. And you might say, well, Guy, you were gone for a while because of your wife's medical condition, and it's going to take a while to build things back up again. I understand that. But I would ask, up from where? From not being able to pay the bills even at the highest peak that the show's had? Up from that? And I have to face the fact that maybe it's me. I'm a confident guy. always have believed that I can verbally spar with the best of them, and that I know the issues as well as anybody can know all of them enough to talk publicly about them on the radio. But I must also consider whether or not it's just me that's wrong. And if that's the case, then I've been beating my head up against the wall for almost 7 years now, not recognizing the fact that I'm not up to the task. Maybe that's it. If that is it, then I can accept that. Just tell me. I realize that not everyone is going to like a particular host. I also realize that sometimes most people don't like a particular host, and that just might be the case here. If it is, I'm a big boy, and I'll accept that verdict. And I know I probably shouldn't be having, and it's probably in poor taste to have a public bit session on the show, but I'm just want to let you know, and I've always been perfectly honest with my audience, that I'm pretty well fed up. I was up all night last night trying to figure out what the hell I can do to get some participation by our audience. The fact is, I've been up many nights wondering and worrying about that. I don't have the answer. I still don't have the answer. And maybe if the show was about sex, it would do better. Sex or maybe show business or Britney Spears, that seems to get people's attention. Maybe I'm just in the wrong field here. But the fact is, I've seen many people that I know have to give up their programs for lack of interest on the left. Peter Werby, although he's like on one night a week now. Mike Malloy several times. Mike's trying to get going again here. Randy Rhodes, Peter B. Collins, one of the very best. Tony Trupiano, Nancy Skinner, Mario Cuomo, for God's sake. Air America's not surviving financially again. Nova M is down the tubes. So I don't think it's that we don't have qualified people on the left. We do. It's apathy, and it stinks. I don't know what the future will bring for this show. I don't know about even the next show. But frankly, you want to know the truth? I'm fed up. I'm terribly disillusioned. I'm terribly disappointed. Not because I'm not making a bunch of money. Hell, for me personally, this show's been a money pit. I'm sad that the left is willing to hand the reins of power over to the right with nary a whimper in the media. Oh, sure, we've got the political power at the moment. We've got the House and the Senate and the White House. But I'm telling you that without a solid liberal media, that will not last. That will not last. It cannot last. I guess enough bitching for now. Maybe I should get out that bottle of Ouzo and forget the whole thing. That might be the best thing today. But I'm always honest with you, and that's how I feel today.
Let's drop the big one and see what build an all-American amusement park there. They got surfing too. Boom goes London, boom Paris. More room for you and more room for me. In every city, the whole world round will just be another American town. Oh, how peaceful it will be. We'll set everybody free. You wear a Japanese kimono, baby, be a pair of shoes for me. They all hate us anyhow, so let's drop the big one now. Let's drop the big one now.
Oh, back with you here on the Guy James Show. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join us on the program. Or not. When I get started talking about the states, somehow Texas always gets involved. Did you see this latest story? One of the Texas lawmakers, Asians should change their name to make them easier for Americans to deal with. Let's read you this story. On Tuesday, State Representative Betty Brown, I guess that's a good American name, Betty Brown, huh? Caused a firestorm during House testimony on voter identification legislation when she said that Asian Americans should change their names because they're too hard to pronounce. Just too hard to pronounce. So, everyone should change their names. How about that? Rather than everyone here having to learn Chinese, she said, I understand it's a rather difficult language. Do you think that would behoove you and your citizens to adopt a name that we could deal more readily with here, Brown said. Can't you see that this is something that would make it a lot easier for you and the people who are poll workers if you could adopt a name with just for identification purposes that's easier for Americans to deal with? Yesterday, Brown continued to resist calls to apologize. Her spokesman said that Democrats just want this to be about race. Ah, yes, Texas. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, it's Tex Betsy.
Oh, how appropriate. Hi, Texas Betty. Betsy, how are you?
Good. You know, that's why I changed my name to Tex when I moved here. Because nobody could pronounce the Betsy part.
Isn't that something? That woman, I don't know.
It's bigoted and horrible.
It is.
I actually blogged about it this morning, and one of the things that came up among my commenters was a discussion of Hispanic surnames and what happens with people who use two last names, and what the school districts and the voters registration and the driver's license bureau, what they do to them as well, and what they do to married women who either use two names or hyphenate or choose one or get divorced and want to go back. And, you know, there are any number of people who are not white, you know, white males who have difficult last names or last name issues. You know, we're not all born with the last name Brown.
No, certainly not. And it just makes you wonder about that woman. Her name is Brown. Is she maybe of German ancestry? Was her name Braun at one time? And people didn't know how to pronounce it when they moved right here, so they changed it in many cases. God, I just I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is about Texas. I really don't, but I see Glenn Beck, and we'll talk about that a little later. He's going to have a big to-do down at the Alamo. coming up next week.
Oh, what's he doing with the Alamo?
They're going to have a tax day get together, and Beck is going to be like the guest of honor, and I guess lead the troops at the Alamo. They're doing it to remind folks that the last stand was taken there at the Alamo, and so that's going to be symbolic of taxpayers of America taking their last stand at the Alamo, and they're going to take pictures and have a big rally and all that.
Well, maybe I'll go down and have a sign that says, that says new taxes for billionaires.
Beck did say he doesn't want any signs. See, he thinks that he's...
And I have to listen to him?
Well, of course. He thinks that they're going to... that the liberals
I barely listen to you guys.
What's on your mind today?
Actually, I was calling in to talk to you about education. You and I had an exchange a few weeks ago about some of the things that are happening in schools now and that are happening with immigrants and happening what's happening to education. And when you and I had talked, you were not on the air. And then when you came back on the air, I could not find a three-minute block that I did not have people coming in and out of my office. So
yeah.
Today I managed to finish working early and am home. So I figured I'd call in. One of the things that I wanted to say is something that's going on in California where the school districts there are not allowing students to register unless they have like 5 or 6 different documents, including the parents' tax returns, including the parents' Social Security card, not just the students, including all kinds of stuff that is going to end up going through the courts, and the ACLU is going to end up involved because there's no way that what they're doing is legal.
Well,
what they want to do, what they say they want to do, is to prove that the students live in their district, which I understand. We do the same thing. But what they're actually doing is excluding quite a few students who, for one reason or another, don't have all of the paperwork.
Well, and God knows, we certainly wouldn't want to educate kids that happen to be living in this country without all the tax returns and everything of their parents. We couldn't do that. We don't want to educate kids. It'd be better to have them uneducated and roaming the streets and getting into crime, would it not? That's the attitude of some of those people, I think. Amazing.
Maybe they're planning on getting the 9-year-olds to work for 5 cents an hour.
Well, it's been done before, and I don't see any reason why it can't be done again. I think if big business has its way, we would go back to that. As soon as they get done exterminating the unions, it will go back to that. That's the aim. That's a sad story. It really is. I understand problems, financial problems with the illegals and all, but, God, that's the kids we're talking about here.
Kids are kids, regardless of how they end up at the school. And if they're at school, they should be educated.
If they walk through that front door, in my opinion, they got every right to get an education in this country.
I have definite opinions about students who should do 6 months of eighth grade before they start in high school, or students who would be better served in one program or another.
Sure.
But I want them all at school.
Sure.
At the high school where they want to enroll kids now who are going to get failing grades for the semester because there's not enough time. No matter how smart they are, there's not enough time to do the semester's work. And if they haven't been in school this semester, I would much rather have them enroll in middle school.
Absolutely.
And come to us, you know. But I want them in school.
I agree with you. Let's make sure, and putting them in middle school first, as you say, let's make sure that they can accept the rigors of school and show the appropriate levels they need in order to move on. And there's no better place to do that. You're exactly right. It, kind of a
yeah.
kind of a, like a pre-qualification there, and I think that's a good idea. Well,
but we have a number of, I work with refugees, we have a number of students now who are coming in with a first grade education in their home country or a fourth grade education in their home country and no familiarity with the English alphabet.
Hmm. And,
we put them and we stick them in algebra. Why? Because they're ninth graders.
Yeah. I see.
Insane.
Let me ask you, the immigrants you're talking about, they're not all Hispanic, right?
No.
I think we discussed that
before. Most of our immigrants, where I teach, most of our immigrants are Hispanic. Most of our refugees are not.
Mm-hmm. And
most of our refugees are Burmese or African.
And when they come in with a first grade education or fourth grade education in the country they come, do you, what level do you find them on aside from the language problem? What level do you find them on educationally in this country, ahead or behind?
Not even at our first grade level, because when they did first grade, assuming that they haven't been using those skills, that was 8 or 9 or 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I used to teach a class full of students who had at least a 5-year education gap. And every kid in my class was doing elementary school math to build the kind of skills they needed to be successful in life. I mean, to be able to go to the grocery store and know whether you were spending more than $20, to be able to use a bus map with times, to be able to fill out a time card for work, to know how many hours you worked in a week and whether they're cheating you. Those were the kinds of skills that I built with the kids.
I just wonder when Americans, those who resist the education of these kids, I wonder when they're going to understand that an uneducated kid is a burden on our society. It's a burden on all of us. And yet they fight educating these kids. I don't understand. I never will.
No, I don't either. I know that in our I had a conversation with our principal, who is no longer our principal, but our principal several years ago, about whether I was teaching to the state test or not. And I told him flat out that these students will never pass this test this year. There is no way these students will pass a ninth grade test. I'm giving them the math that they need, because most of them will be dropping out between now and the time the test comes a year from now.
Well, now we have that problem here in Florida, teaching to the test. We have that FCAT test here. And I hear teachers complain all the time that all they do is teach kids to prepare for that test. They don't
The teachers in my school not only are teaching to the test, but the amount of paperwork that is required of them and the amount of online paperwork that is required of the teachers has more than doubled since I left the classroom 10 years ago.
Wow.
More than doubled. I look at what the teachers are doing, and I'm amazed any of them stay.
Yeah, it does. It makes it hard on the profession. There isn't any question. And as I've always said, there isn't any profession that deserves more respect than teachers. I've fought that ever since I was old enough to know better in school, that there's nobody more important than teachers. Underpaid, overworked, and we've all seen the bad examples of teachers. I had teachers that weren't worth 2 cents, But I also had teachers that molded and shaped me into what I am today. And for those people, I'm eternally grateful. And there's lots of people like that in our school systems around the country. People fail to recognize that.
There are quite a few. And, there are not enough systems in place to weed out the less proficient teachers or the teachers who burned out already.
Sure.
And keep and encourage and pay the teachers who are the best.
Right. Well, it should be an elite group. It should be nothing but the best. But I understand what you're saying. It's hard to weed out those that, you know, some people just don't have a knack for it. They may discover after they got out of college and you know, they took education and got started teaching, they discover that they don't have a knack to be a real teacher.
Well, the other thing that has changed, when I began my career 20 years ago, everyone was university trained. Everyone had to do student teaching and practicum and all of the education courses. And now, I don't know what the statistics are, but in my district, over half of the new hires are alternative certifications, which means that they may be very proficient in math or physics or whatever they're teaching, but they have almost no education courses and no student teaching before they come in.
What are the requirements for an alternative certification?
The programs take about a year to complete. It's coursework at night, but there generally is either very little of a practicum or none at all.
What sort of educational requirements are there?
They have to have a bachelor's degree.
Oh, okay. I've mentioned before on the program that you can be a substitute teacher here in Lee County, Florida, with a GED.
I think you can here as well. Although I'm not sure. I don't know what the requirements for a sub are.
Yeah. I have found that truly amazing. I really have. Well, Bessie, I hope you plan on staying in teaching for a long time. You plan on making it a lifelong career. You've been at it 20 years. It seems like you're on that path.
I am no longer doing classroom teaching. I'm doing more counseling, administrative stuff. But, yes, this is... I shouldn't say that. I do classroom teaching. I teach Hebrew school, but I don't do classroom teaching during the day. But yes, I do plan to stay in education.
And
this is my career.
If you got out, why would it be? What would cause you to get out of the educational field?
Well, actually, they don't currently have funding for my position for next year.
Hmm.
And so there is some question about whether I will go and run a different program somewhere in a different school or whether I will take over the immigrant testing program for the district or what my responsibilities will be next year. But if we continued to have, Texas does not have nearly as big cuts in education as California. If we did, and I would imagine Florida is heading that way also with the number of unemployed and the number of homes that have gone to foreclosure.
Yes, I believe the shortfall
with,
nobody's
paying property tax on those.
I think the shortfall here in Lee County, I believe, is $50 million next year. And naturally, the first thing to go, they're going to get rid of all the arts teachers, the music teachers, anybody in the arts is going to go by the wayside this year. That's a terrible thing. Yeah, I don't know who believes that kids don't need a musical education and an education in the arts, but obviously some people do, and so let's just cast those people aside, those teachers aside, and that's what's in store for us here.
That's not good. The choir program at my son's high school is the only thing keeping him involved in school at all.
Yes.
And the ability to go to choir performances and choir competitions is the only thing that keeps him passing some of his other classes. And I don't think he's alone.
No, anything. Any part of the curriculum that keeps kids interested in school and staying in school is valuable. And yet, well, here we are. We are passing out tax cuts once again in Florida to the wealthy, but we don't have enough money to educate our kids. And it's a situation that boggles the mind.
So to answer your question, what would get me out of the profession would be being defunded.
Yeah. Well, that'd do it just for about anybody. Got to eat. Betsy, thanks so much for calling today and letting us know about that.
And don't get down. You've got listeners.
Oh, yeah. I know we've got listeners. It's just that...
Some of us listen on podcasts and don't get a chance to call.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's only because I had to be at work early today that I'm home now and able to call.
Okay. Well, thank you, Betsy. It's good to hear from you.
Good to talk to you.
Yeah. Bye-bye. From the Lone Star State, Texas, Betsy. We did talk a little bit about Texas today, and I probably have... And it's a shame when we start talking about school issues like that, and it's happening all across America. It's just happening all across America. It's going to come to the point, you know, the reason this nation prospered was because of our public education system. And they're trying to take that away from us with the vouchers and the private schools and all that now, and the religious schools and all that. They're siphoning off the kids off of the regular public schools. And I understand public schools have problems. I understand that. But public education is what helped make America great. And a lot of people are willing to cast public education to the dogs now. And it's criminal. It really is. I don't know. I'm fascinated that anybody could think that way. The future of this country depends on education. It always has. When we were educated, we became a better nation. We became more competitive, became more respected. It's the reason this country, one of the reasons this country became great, one of the major reasons this country became what we are, is our education and higher education. Look how many people right now are not able to go to college, not able to afford it at all. It's just a lousy shame. Let's head on over to the phone.
Hi. More respected.
Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
The reason.
Hello?
Hi. Hello?
Hello there?
Hello, you're on the... This is the Guy James Show.
Hey, this is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
I guess I got into the... Afterwards or whatever. I would like to ask you about what is going on, if you can explain it to me more than I comprehend, that we're not going to be able, unless Congress, I'm talking about here in Florida, unless Congress does otherwise, we're not going to be able to get any educational funding from the incentive plan because of something that they did. They cut out, I'm assuming, during Bush's administration.
Well, I'm afraid I can't answer that. I know we are getting some money from the...
Well, and also I read where that that our Congress, our Republican Congress, is fighting us getting the money for the Medicaid and children.
Yeah. Well, they are going to remain the party of no for the next 3.5 years. There ain't any question about that. They're going to They're going to fight against anything. I don't care if Jesus was the president right now and the disciples were all Democrats. The Republicans would be fine. They would, which they probably would be, you know. But the Republicans are going to fight against anything that they would come up with, just in order to be contrary. They've taken this contrarian view, and they're going to that stance, and they're going to stick with it. I don't think there's any doubt about it now. Politically, they have to. They've hung their hat on that, and they're going to have to stay with it now. And you know, it could work for them if things don't turn around. Then again, if things do begin to turn around a bit, why, it's going to be a disaster for the Republican Party, and you won't hear again from them in a major way for a good many years.
Well, that would be great.
It would. I don't believe in a one-party system, but to have them down and out for a decade or two or three would be a good thing. We could get the country back on track and making a little progress once again, rather than just trying to stay where we're at all the time.
I was just going to say that a lot of my information I get email from Charlie Crist and from the Democratic Party of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the, I don't guess he said that, but one of them, you know, was talking, I was trying to find the website, I mean the email, was about, you know, that the Democratic Party is trying to fight for us, but they're in the minority still.
All here in Florida, big time. And will remain so. I don't see that changing for a long, long time, if ever.
Yeah, and you know how Democrats are down here. You don't know if a lot of them are really Democrats.
Oh, absolutely. When I was at the convention last year, I had a couple of those blue dogs from up around Pensacola and up in that area.
That's big time blue dogs. Yeah.
I had a couple of them on the show, and after it was over with, I asked one of them, I said, "Are you sure you're a Democrat?" Because the interview didn't go like I thought it would, and I was amazed that this guy really was in the Democratic Party, but he ran as a Democrat.
Yeah.
You never know. Yeah. You're right.
Well, remember all the Democrats that voted for Bush, remember in 2000?
Yeah, yeah.
And we kept hearing on the TV about, well, they're Democrat. You know, the judge is a Democrat. Do you know this is a Democrat? And all, yeah, you don't know what kind of Democrats we have down here.
Yeah.
Remember Judge Saul?
Oh, yeah.
That had all the votes driven up to Tallahassee?
Mm-hmm.
OJ-like?
Yep.
Only several vehicles?
Yep.
Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And then that guy, you know, kept on and on. And I remember one time that Gore's lawyer said, well, it's kind of like he knew he was kind of fighting in vain. And why the guy just get on with it. Because he found for them the only ones that were for us, we the people, was the Supreme Court that we had at that time. And, of course, now, you know, we don't have that anymore. We don't have them anymore. Did you know Charles Kennedy was one now?
No. No.
You remember him, don't you?
No, not really. Charles Kennedy. No.
Oh, Lord. He was one of the ones that, of the spokesmen for the impeachment of Bill Clinton.
Hmm. I'm getting
And you know the man that's head of, that is our attorney general, you know that he's another one.
Oh, sure.
Bill McCollum.
Bill McCollum, yeah.
Yeah. And anyway, after the impeachment hearings, Kennedy became one of Jeb Bush's attorneys, you know, came down here.
Sure.
And he has since been appointed to the Supreme Court, sad to say, by Crist.
Florida's a strange place politically. It really
is. Yes, it is.
If you're a Democrat, you have to run as a Republican to get elected. I know a couple of guys that have done that really were Democrats and changed over to the Republican Party so they could get elected, because they knew if they put an R behind, they knew if they put an R behind their name, no matter what their views were, that they would get elected here. So it's a,
and some of them were thinking about becoming Republicans, but they didn't. The one that ran for who is second in line to the governor?
Oh, yeah, he's a local guy here, the lieutenant governor. I'm trying to think of his
name. Lieutenant governor. Well, after Lawton Childs passed away.
Cotchin, I believe his name is. I think that's
Well, after Lawton Childs passed away, and, you know, they had, and that was very convenient, wasn't it? Anyway, they, you know, we had Buddy McKay.
Right.
And the guy that was running for lieutenant governor was from my neck of the woods, and he'd been contemplating becoming a Republican for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
He never did. He never has. But
right.
So to me, that
it's a strange political world here in Florida.
Well, I just, you know, I didn't know. It's really confusing about, you know, because Chris does want the incentive, but they're fighting the ones that we could take, and there's a problem with past administration on the school thing.
Well, the Republican House of Representatives in Florida are very powerful, and we shall see who wins that battle, I hope.
You take me, that's all I have representing me is Republicans.
Me too.
Uh-huh. And I still have Putnam. He claims he's going to quit and run for Secretary of Agriculture in Florida.
Well, I wish he would. That would be a... Well, I don't
know.
That is a powerful position here in the state of Florida. Putnam. Oh.
Well, I didn't know if you knew all of that or not, but I've been hearing about it for quite a while, but I didn't know that they were fighting about the other part. I know they've called Chris all kind of names. Jeb Bush's oldest son, almost a felon. If his girlfriend's folks hadn't been afraid to press charges.
Right. That's right.
Was criticizing him, and I don't know where he all of a sudden came out of the woodwork.
Well, the Bushes will never be clear out of the woodwork here in Florida. They've got their fangs deep, tentacles deep into the state, and I imagine that'll last for a while. Thanks for calling today. Good to hear from you. Everything okay up in North Central Florida? Well, you're not in North Central. Central Florida.
South Central. We're hanging in there, I guess.
Okay. Well, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Radio, and then that radio program, I forget whether some Mexico. What kind of food do you think?
I don't know. Whereas I wouldn't have people attacking me first. I have the sense of that those two destinations. If you get killed in your church, probably just, I don't know. But, very good. Found that. And I also found a website called, probably everybody in the world knew about this but me, a website called A Keyboard and a 45. And I think that's maybe what it is. That's what it's about, A Keyboard and a 45. And you go in there and find this problem and information you want about it, kind of weapon you want. Some of the pictures you see on some of the gun websites, these guys are amazing. Some of the weapons that they own. One guy called in and mentioned about his 69-year-old mother not being able to get enough ammo for her AK-47.
What the hell?
A woman 69 years old born with an AK-47? Somebody who explains to me why your name is that? Well, these gun nuts, a lot of them are explaining why. We're going to talk about that in a second hour. I think I'm becoming a little bit obsessed, a little bit passionate with this gun culture. Not that I want to get involved in it, but some of these people are just downright crazy. And I think it's time that some people who are on the air and radio programs and TV programs, I think it's time that they understand just who they're talking to. And that maybe they've got an influence on them. I think they have got an influence on some of these people. And it's frightening. It truly is frightening. So, we're ready to talk about that in a second.
We'll talk about it.
Well, we're going to pause for news coming up at the top of the hour.
We'll be back in just a couple of minutes, so don't go away.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. As unification efforts for the labor movement continue, the AFL-CIO, Change to WIN, and the National Education Association are creating a National Labor Coordinating Committee to act in unison on major issues facing working Americans. A complete unification agreement will be ironed out in the coming months. The new national committee will deal with issues like labor law reform, health care reform, and rebuilding the economy. Steel workers came out in Granite City, Illinois on Tuesday to oppose plans to use foreign-made steel for proposed pipeline projects. Jesse Russell reports.
Nearly 1,000 people attended the rally on Tuesday, intended to bring attention to plans to use foreign-made steel for pipeline projects in the United States. The rally was held in front of the shuttered United States Steel Corporation plant in the St. Louis suburb, where many of the protesting steelworkers had previously been employed. The stimulus package approved by President Barack Obama in February does contain a Buy American clause, but that clause does not apply to private projects. Specifically, the workers had gathered to protest the so-called Keystone Pipeline, which will be made with steel shipped in from India. The project is estimated to be $5.2 billion and will span the states of Missouri, Oklahoma, Nebraska, Kansas, and both of the Dakotas.
A federal lawsuit against New York City seeks to change the hiring, selection, and exam process at the city's fire department. John Coons is with the Vulcan Society, a black firefighters organization with NFDNY. He says it's ironic that New York City is one of the most racially diverse cities in the world, while its fire department is not nearly diverse enough.
Yet, its fire department doesn't reflect that in its hiring of firefighters. So this case is really about people's opportunity to work.
The U.S. Justice Department has intervened in the lawsuit filed by the Center for Constitutional Rights, also alleging that the hiring, selection, and exams process discriminates. Coons hopes the suit can be resolved before it's scheduled for trial in June.
We're looking for justice to be upheld. We're looking forward to this case being dealt with in an expeditious manner. Ultimately, we're talking about future careers here. We're talking about the well-being of the city.
Here is today's economic report. Does beer help the economy? According to a new study commissioned by the Beer Institute and the National Beer Wholesalers Association, it certainly does. 1.9 million jobs are created by beer sales, and the industry contributes $198 billion annually to the economy. The study suggests 1 million jobs are created within the industry, while the beer industry supports 888,000 retail positions.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year. And a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run with those scissors,
it's the least you can do.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Ah, yes. Guy James with you here on the Head On Radio Network, affectionately known as The Horn. Welcome to the show today. Glad to have you along with us. We were talking briefly about the Lone Star State a little earlier in the program today, and I wanted to mention a couple of more things in the news about the Lone Star State, a state with a glorious history. We already told you about the Texas lawmaker who thought that the Oriental people ought to change their names so that they'd be easier to pronounce for Americans. I wonder if she'd think that about McGillicuddy's and all the people with the strange name, people from Poland and Russia, and I wonder why she didn't say that. I wonder why. But another story about Texas, and another frightening story. It makes you wonder about some of the people in Texas. Today is a keynote day in their efforts to expand our right to keep and bear arms in Texas. One step closer to campus carry. House Bill 1893, a bill relating to the carrying of concealed handguns on the campuses of institutions of higher education, has made it through the House Public Safety Committee. From the TSRA, the TSRA members, family, and friends, you made it happen. On Wednesday afternoon, April the 8th, the House Committee on Public Safety voted out HB 1893 TSRA-backed legislation sponsored by Representative Joe Driver, Republican from Garland, that would allow concealed handgun licensees to protect themselves on college and university campuses by a 5-3 vote. Makes you wonder who those three were that had the temerity to vote against this in Texas. So let me get this straight. We have going to have college students carrying concealed weapons. Some of them like 18 years old. I was 17 when I started college. Carrying a concealed weapon. I understand that we've had a couple of killings on college campuses. We had that one at Virginia Tech last year, which was an absolute tragedy. The other one, of course, took place, I can't remember the guy's name anymore, but it took place on a Texas campus. A guy with a rifle got up in the bell tower up there and was shooting people. That was many, many years ago. It must have been 40 years. I don't know how long ago it was. I do remember it. So now is going to be shoot 'em up time in Texas. Everybody going to be able to carry concealed weapons on the campus. I don't know if the professors have them and the teachers will have them and the students will have them and maybe the cafeteria workers will have them. And that's a wonderful thought that we're going to concealed weapons. And back to Texas, Glenn Beck, I listened to this morning because I had heard he was going to say something about it. The guy's been in the news lately. He's been enjoying a big spike in the ratings. All the freaking lunatics that like to listen to this guy and take him seriously. He was nearly moved to tears again when I heard him this morning talking about the Alamo. I mentioned that to Texas Betsy. Glenn Beck is going to appear at a tax rally at the Alamo next week because he says he needs to save America. He already spread the word that forces are out to get him and ruin the event. He said, "You will stand in front of the Alamo and America will see." And I thought to myself, see what, Glenn? See what? What the hell is this thing about? I know what it's further about. What it's about. It's about further dividing America. And when you think about it, after all he's done to sow discontent these past few weeks, he actually had the temerity to say to his crazed followers, "Come to the Alamo with the attitude of Martin Luther King." The guy's certifiable. A guy I know locally here, and the Glenn Beck show is on here locally, naturally, on our local right-wing station. He hired Glenn Beck to do an ad for his business. And I know it won't make any difference to this business, my business. I bought all my tires and had much of the small automobile work done at this place, you know, shocks and hoses and belts and that sort of thing, front end alignments. Never again. Never again. If he pulled that ad right now, never, ever again. It's the Rick Johnson Auto Company here. It's Rick Johnson Tires and whatever. But Rick Johnson, he's got a little chain here in Southwest Florida. Never, never again. Anyone using this lunatic as a means to make money doesn't deserve my business or anyone else's business. So another one on the list of people that are going to have to do without Guy James' money. I tell you. And more about Texas. If you can stand it, a little more about the Lone Star State. Just this Tuesday night alone, down here, down in Houston, they had four separate shootings, four killed and four wounded. And in the last few weeks in America, we've had more than 50 people killed by gun-wielding maniacs. This is an email I got from somebody in Houston. In 30 states, people can buy assault rifles at gun shows with no question asked. And since a black dude became president, gun sales are up as much as 46%, while people are buying lifetime supplies of ammunition. it's crazy. I ripped off some audio that I want you to hear. This is Johnny Dury, a gun dealer, I believe in Dallas, somewhere in Texas. I think this just about tells it all.
Ammunition shortage in America. It's affecting police and sheriff's departments all over the U.S. It's also being seen by gun dealers, from big retailers like Walmart to smaller family-run businesses to online operations. Ammunition suppliers say the shortage is due to several factors, including the sheer volume of ammunition heading overseas to fight the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. But they also say the shortage, as well as a sharp rise in gun sales, coincided with the election of President Barack Obama. They say it was fueled in part by fears that his administration would usher in more restrictive gun laws. Johnny Dury owns Dury's Gun Shop in San Antonio, Texas, and he joins me on the line now. Welcome to the program, Mr. Dury.
Good afternoon. How are you today?
I'm well. I'm wondering what your stock room looks like. Do you have a hard time meeting demand for ammunition there?
We have had a big time trouble getting enough ammunition in here, although we are a big enough store where we've just been right at the edge that just about the time that we run out of it, then there's another shipment that's come through. But a lot of the small dealers have not been so fortunate in that.
When did you first notice this ammunition shortage?
Well, it started the day that Obama got elected is when everything just really went crazy in the gun business. We had a few speculators the week before the election that were thinking that he was going to get elected, but most of the people just waited till the day that they knew the election was over with and done, and from that day on it's been crazy in just about every gun shop in the United States.
So, wait a minute. Help me understand what's going on. On November 5th, the day after the election, people headed to the gun store and started to stock up?
Like you wouldn't believe.
Now, there have been stories about this in newspapers all over the country, the shortage of ammunition.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the gun dealers are quoted saying that this is fueled in part by people who are worried about more restrictive gun laws, that they're buying more guns and they're buying more ammunition. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, they're buying more guns, and then with the purchases of the guns, the ammunition goes right along with that. So it's not just an ammunition shortage, it's a gun and ammunition shortage. And it's just there's the sheer volume of it. Right after the election, everybody was scared that he was going to take this ammo away or he was going to tax it out of sight on the prices. So people started stocking up, buying, you know, a half a lifetime to a lifetime supply of ammo all at one time.
A lifetime supply?
Mm-hmm. I had a 69-year-old woman the other day called me and said, I want to give you my credit card for a case of ammunition for my AK-47. She said, I'll be damned if I'm going to have anybody tell me I can't have any ammo.
The FBI is reporting a 31% increase in criminal background checks. That seems to comport with what you're seeing there.
Our business is up 47%. So I would think the 31 would be light.
You know, there's an interesting irony here. Because you're telling me that a lot of people are coming in and buying more guns, more ammunition, because they're worried about more restrictive gun laws.
Mm-hmm.
But the people who promote those more restrictive gun laws might listen to this conversation and say, that's exactly why we need those laws.
You know what? The thing that those anti-gun people don't understand is the people are buying it to protect themselves. They're so scared of the socialist type of, let's take over the banks, let's talk about take over the oil companies, let's give all of this money to people who are without jobs, let's reward all these people who are not working hard. And they said, well, if the government is going that away, what are they going to try to take away from us now? And they, you know what the big concern is they're worried about not being able to get any ammo and not being able to protect themselves. They feel like if the criminals know you can't get guns, then it's just going to make it easier targets to commit crimes.
How's business today?
We'll say it's an average post-Obama day.
An average post-Obama day?
Mm-hmm. This time of year with the Obama stuff still going on, we're probably 15% over what a normal April day would be.
Johnny Dury owns Dury's Gun Shop in San Antonio, Texas.
San Antonio, Texas. All right. Well, to protect themselves. Could I ask, protect themselves from what? Are there going to be carloads of criminals, truckloads maybe, big dump truckloads of criminals running around the neighborhoods, breaking into everybody's homes, and everybody's got to have a gun, and you're going to be like a shootout on every block? A woman 69 years old gonna get ammunition for my AK-47. No one's going to... What is wrong with these people? What is wrong with them? You know, go back to this email I got. It said here, the guy says here in Dumbbutt, he's talking about Texas. The Texas State Senate passed legislation 31-0 to allow employees to keep loaded handguns and assault rifles in their cars and pickup trucks in company-owned parking lots. Said here in Texas, we want to ensure that disgruntled employees don't have to drive all the way home to access their arsenals. After they get a pink slip, they only have to jog out to the parking lot to get their guns to shoot the bastards who fired them. And that creepy computer guy they never like, and that chick who laughed at him. It's a facilitation law, a time saver. Texas State Senate votes for loaded guns in employer parking lots. As many as 25% of Americans hate President Obama so much, they feel the need for a lifetime supply of ammunition to use against our troops after President Obama and the Democrats turn their beloved country into a totalitarian socialist state. Ah. A totalitarian socialist state. It would be like that movie. What was it called? That wasn't the Red Dawn. I don't know what it was called. Where the Russians, I think, invaded country and we had their guerrilla groups fighting them. That's what these guys are. They saw that movie. Only it's not going to be the Russians invading, it's just going to be the Democrats and the liberals. How did they find out we were coming for them? Which one of you spilled the beans and told them? Who amongst you told the people on the right that we had these trucks all ready to come around and confiscate weapons and fill them up door-to-door, house-to-house searches for their weapons? Who told them? Somehow they found out. You talk about paranoid. There are a hell of a lot of things in this country that I'm afraid about, but not that. Man. And that also explains, going back to this email, Republican Party's newest intellectual spokesman, Joe the Plumber, says it's just plain wrong for the government to use tax money to help others who have been unemployed, become unemployed, whose children go hungry, families become homeless or are lazy. It's Who says that paying taxes to help others in trouble is just plain wrong? Jesus? George Washington? Where does that crap come from? I'll tell you where it comes from. It comes from Ayn Rand and the Cato Institute and the Libertarian Party. And what I think are probably the lower levels of hell. Those who claim that paying taxes to help others is deserving of armed rebellion also seem to wear their Christianity and their family values on their foreheads. Man, oh man. 24% of gun-crazy NRA Americans do not want a penny of their taxes going to help those others who have slipped between the cracks or become unemployed. 24%. That's what the guns are for. I'll pay my taxes, but by God, you won't be feeding somebody that's out of a job with my money. It's comforting to know that there are people like that. Wow. There's all this noise going on about Glenn Beck. And I wonder if Glenn Beck knows who Jim Atkinson is. I'm sure he does. Beck isn't stupid. He may be insane, but he's not stupid. Or even worse, he is sane and knows what he's doing. That would be scary. But he made headlines, Atkinson did, on July the 28, 2008. You remember this, I know you do, when he brought his sawed-off 12-gauge shotgun into the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist Church in Knoxville, Tennessee. And after whipping it out of a guitar case, he opened fire on parishioners while a group of schoolchildren performed songs up by the altar. Atkinson killed two people and wounded several others. Atkinson, a 58-year-old unemployed truck driver, brought 70 shotgun shells with him to the church and assumed he'd keep killing until the police arrived on the scene and shot him dead as well. Instead, some members of the congregation were able to wrestle him to the ground and hold him for the police. And when investigators went to Atkinson's home in search of a motive, as well as evidence for the pending trial, they found copies of Michael Savage's Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, Let Freedom Ring by Sean Hannity, and The O'Reilly Factor by Fox News' Bill O'Reilly. They also came across what was supposed to have been Atkinson's suicide note, a handwritten four-page manifesto explaining his murderous actions. The one-word answer for his deed? Hate. The three-word answer? He hated liberals. This is from Eric Bollert, our friend over at Media Matters. He goes on to say the only way, and he said in his manifesto, Atkinson did, the only way we can rid ourselves of this evil is to kill in the streets, kill them where they gather. I'd like to encourage other like-minded people to do what I have done. This is in his suicide note. If life ain't worth living anymore, don't just kill yourself. Do something for your country before you go. Go kill liberals. What Atkinson especially hated about liberals, he called them this cancer, this pestilence, in his manifesto, his suicide note, and what he hated about candidate Osama Hussein Obama, is what he called him, was that they were marching America toward ruin. And let me quote Atkinson again. Liberals are evil. They embrace the tenets of Karl Marx. They're Marxist, socialist, communist. Atkinson seethed over the way liberals were trying to turn this country into a communist state and couldn't comprehend why they would embrace Marxism. Does that sound familiar, Glenn Beck? Says Eric Bollert over Media Matters. John Bostic is one of the Unitarian Church members who tackled Atkinson after the first round of gunfire went off inside the sanctuary. Two months ago, Atkinson pleaded guilty to the murder charges and was sentenced to life in prison. And at the hearing, Bostic told the Associated Press he didn't think the killer had been insane, but rather had been manipulated by anti-liberal rhetoric. He said there are a lot of people who hate liberals, and if we stir that around in the pot and on the airwaves, eventually there will be people like Atkinson who get infected by the violent rhetoric and put it into violent action, Bostic said. He remained worried about future violence. He said, do you think there are other Jim Atkinsons out there listening to hate speech? I do. End quote. To think that people like Beck and Limbaugh and Hannity and Michael Savage and a host of others would do what they do for dollars to stir up this kind of hate, and let me throw Michelle Bachmann in with the rest of them. She's every bit as bad, probably worse because she's an elected official. It's just unconscionable. I found this open letter to the gun nuts. It says, dear gun nuts, do you know what a self-fulfilling prophecy is? It's where you believe something is going to happen and you act in a way to make it happen even though it is not in your best interest to do so. Like believing that Barack Obama and the Democratic Congress are going to take your guns away. So what do? You act in an irresponsible manner, like you totally cannot handle the responsibility of the rights to own of gun ownership. You know, like the idiot in Pittsburgh who killed three police officers. He was convinced that his guns, including an AK-47, were going to be confiscated by the federal government, even though there was no evidence that was going to happen other than the rantings of Glenn Beck and Wayne LaPierre of the NRA, or the idiot in Binghamton, New York. And that guy wasn't even a U.S. citizen. And going back to the guy in Knoxville, Tennessee, who shot up a church full of Unitarians because he couldn't get access to a famous liberal. In this open letter to gun nuts, it says, I know you're obsessed about gun rights, but what about the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? I know that is not in the Constitution, but it is one of the ideals of our country that our country holds dearly. Is a person's life less important than your right to own a gun? What happens when your right to own a gun infringes upon another person's right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? The dead cannot exercise their human rights. You say that you need your guns for self-defense, but your insistence upon packing heat worries the rest of us. What are you so afraid of? The ACLU? Liberals, people of a different race, women, children, shoplifters, somebody with a bigger penis? Does it give you a woody knowing that you're making up for your inadequacies? If you insist upon being a vigilante, how do we know you know what you are doing? How much training have you had? Do you know the maximum effective range of a 9mm Beretta pistol? Can you hit the side of a barn if you fire a 9mm pistol 10 feet away from it? Can you throw a 9mm pistol more than 50 meters? You do realize that when you own a gun, you have a responsibility to ensure that you do not use it to commit a crime. If the mass shootings continue, then it is obvious that Americans cannot handle the responsibilities of the Second Amendment rights, and the Second Amendment will have to be repealed just like Prohibition was repealed with a constitutional amendment. I hope these people get through their haze of paranoia, because it seems to me that's exactly what it is, paranoia. And it's dangerous, very dangerous paranoia. We're going to pause for a break. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Hey, Ann Coulter, you make my little soldier stand attention when I see your equine features on my bedroom TV. Hey, Ann Coulter, they say that you're a poulter, geist or a banshee or a witch. I think you're just the perfect creature to help this cracker scratch his itch. While you're flogging the liberals and calling them faggots, I'm flogging the dummy, I really smack it for you. Hey, and I know you want it too. And while I'm flogging, there's a movie in my noggin starring me and you and some other dame in combinations for which not even Hindus have a name. Hey, Ann Coulter, if I could be less older, richer, more handsome, with more class, bet I could get you to my mansion. Bet I could, well, you know. Don't even tell me you ain't into that. Oh, Ann, I love you, and I defend you all the time. When people say you're mean, I say that's just showmanship, the way a dominatrix uses a whip. Oh, Ann, I think you're beautiful, you willowy, thoroughbred uber goddess. When they say you look horsey, it gives me conniptions. I say cultish is a better description. Shoulders, your sunken cheeks and dishwater mane. I say it makes you look exotic, they say it makes you look insane. But they're just jealous, cause lots and lots of fellas have fallen happy victims to your charms. Those radio call-ins who wear swastikas on their arms. Oh, I'd be ecstatic, my beautiful Annie, if you'd meet me in the paddock. Gimme Puddin' tonight, I'd ride you till the morning light. I can't believe anyone could be so silly to suggest that you're a fella, not really a filly. I'm sure that's not true. At least 65% sure.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Ben Fischel. Despite repeated insistence that its coverage is fair and balanced, Fox News has aggressively encouraged its viewers to get involved in Tea Party protests across the country on Tax Day, which it has described as a response to President Obama's fiscal policies. Here's Glenn Beck.
This year, Americans across the country are holding Tea Parties to let politicians know that we've had enough. Celebrate with Fox News. If you have a Tea Party anywhere that we're not covering one of those, email me at glennbeck@foxnews.com.
But today's most outrageous comment goes to conservative leader Rush Limbaugh giving his thoughts on African-American politicians.
What is it about liberal black politicians they admire in Castro? He has dictatorial power, and they envy that. He's just another of many minorities around the world oppressed by the evil white majority of the United States of America.
For these stories and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
I tell you, it doesn't even surprise me anymore, some of the things that Limbaugh says. In his drug-crazed mind, his mind was virtually destroyed by drugs. I have my local newspaper here from yesterday, and how appropriate, how timely. Get this, the headlines. Now, this isn't a small newspaper. We've got a pretty big population around here, not like New York City or anything. But we're talking about a pretty good circulation. This newspaper has been around 125 years, called the Fort Myers News Press. And the headline, the headline story on this newspaper yesterday. The headline story on this newspaper is that supply of cartridges, a shell of the former self. Supply of cartridges, a shell of former self. Fear of tax increase, Obama policy, change prompt run. And it shows Josh Hackman of the Fowler Firearms and Guns assisting a customer with a gun purchase. Increasing demand for ammunition has caused an increase in prices and lack of availability, Hackman said. He said talk of federal tax increases on ammunition has pushed customers to buy ammo faster than the store can stock it. The story goes on to say, tired of having to cancel trips to the local gun range because he couldn't find ammunition to buy, Patrick Nadel went on the offensive last week. Whew, at least it wasn't that kind of offensive. He said, I called every Walmart from Naples to Port Charlotte, and everybody was sold out. Well, you might know it'd be a Walmart customer. And everybody was sold out. The Cape Coral resident said, the Lehigh store told me they were selling their last box when I called, and that they had only had it for 2 hours. Ammunition is very hard to find because everybody is stockpiling. It's like the paranoia before Y2K. Southwest Florida is not the only region affected by the ammunition shortage. Bullets are running low throughout the United States as a gun-buying frenzy that swept the nation after President Obama's election continues. Fears that Obama will renew the ban on assault weapons or increase taxes on ammunition are fueling the increase in sales, local gun range owners said. And back to the local people, it said, I credit this to my best salesman, Obama. People don't know what he's going to do, so they're just hoarding stuff just in case, said Jim Haverfield, whose Fort Myers gun shop has half the personal defense ammunition it had at this time last year. Only half? Well, at least it has some. Whew. God, that's good to know. Obama hasn't talked about gun control since his January inauguration. Let me tell you right now, I don't see any gun control legislation coming. Do you? It's not going to happen. You know it's not going to happen. I know it's not going to happen. You know it was promised. I know it was. These assault weapons. If somebody could tell me why the hell they need assault weapons, I'd listen. I would listen. Peter Bergenson, a Florida Gulf Coast University political science professor, said the surge in ammunition is based on fear. Oh. People have some legitimate fears of government to begin with, Bergenson said. They feel that government may take away their firearms. And that's something that groups such as the National Rifle Association promote as kind of a scare tactic. It's also a way of rejuvenating memberships. If you claim that your house is on fire, you hope your friends and neighbor will come to your rescue. The NRA, which boasts 4 million members, couldn't be reached for comment. A column written by NRA Executive President Wayne LaPierre, however, detailed the organization's views. He said Obama's alleged support of the Second Amendment is utterly cynical and false. Barack Obama is not for the right to keep and bear arms. He's out to destroy it. And so it goes back to say here locally that Josh Hackman, general manager Can you hear that? I wonder. Somebody in the chat room, let me know. Could you hear what just was going on there? The old technical bug here. Nobody's going to let me know. Okay. You said this is like getting gas before a hurricane. It's horrible right now. There are shortages all over. People are driving here from as far away as Sarasota looking for ammunition. Sales have gotten so brisk, Hackman has had to limit the number of ammo boxes he sells, but people continue to buy despite the escalating prices. A box of 9mm bullets, for example, has increased from $9 to 17 boxes. Bass Pro Shops at Gulf Coast Town Center in South Lee County also has seen a change. The store used to have 4 displays of defensive ammunition. Now it has 1 with empty shelves. So there you have it, this whole story, and it does go on and on and on about the lack of ammunition available here. I tell you, it's been a big concern of mine for a long time now, lack of ammunition. I mentioned to you yesterday, somebody asked me over the weekend if I knew where they could buy some ammo for their .45. Yeah, right, I know where that is. I don't know. I did listen to that Gun Nut Radio last night, and I read some websites, and a gentleman named Sean sent me an email that it's long, but I feel it's right on the money. He said the murder of 3 Pittsburgh police officers last week by a young man who bought into the right-wing lunatic fringe fears that the president is going to outlaw guns is an extreme manifestation of Obama derangement syndrome, known as ODS. But to suggest, as one right-of-center commentator has, that people like myself who make such connections are irrational is the grown-up equivalent of a child closing his eyes, putting fingers in his ears, and chanting nothings to try and drown out a parent or a teacher. Presidential derangement syndromes have a pungent history that go back as far as Abraham Lincoln, read John Wilkes Booth, although they have never flowered so extensively until Bill Clinton arrived in Washington. The crowning symptom of Clinton's derangement syndrome, which had a mercifully brief return during Hillary Clinton's 2008 bid for re-election. It isn't something they truly did have derangement syndrome going on then. And then we had, you know, Kathleen Willey, all of that mess, which brings us to the Obama derangement syndrome and fears that the new president will not only ban guns but lead a communist and or socialist coup, open the border, stall all comers, herd citizens into domestic detention camps, and abandon Israel. And what these syndromes have in common is an irrationality that sometimes manifests itself in paranoia, which was evident in the extreme actions of the 22-year-old kid that, you know, white supremacist last week in Pittsburgh. He was wearing a bulletproof vest and armed with an AK-47 and a .22 long rifle and a pistol. And he killed him, 3 officers. But in the case of the Obama derangement syndrome, there's an additional element that was just merely amusing a few weeks ago, but has, in my view, become worrisome, if not downright alarming, the apocalyptic and very public comments of prominent Republicans such as Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann and idiot tough guy actor Chuck Norris and Fox News pontificator Glenn Beck, whose delusional brand of patriotism leads him to proclaim that a second American Revolution may be necessary and it will not be nonviolent. I think we all need to remember that these are not merely the comments of sore losers, which is a frequent refrain of the right of center commentators who are unwilling to acknowledge that there can be a connection between incendiary talk and incendiary actions. And it should be noted that some derangement syndrome sufferers are equal opportunity whack jobs. You know, the people who see the black helicopters and the UN notices on the back of the stop signs and all that, they aren't necessarily enraged because the current president has a funny middle name. Muslim groups or even American isn't even American citizen. These people are half nuts. I'm not saying that about everybody that owns a gun, but I'm having a hard time understanding all this. Why somebody would go so far off the deep end. Really don't get it. I'm going to pause for a break. I'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us only sky. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for. And no religion, too. Imagine all the people living life in peace.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guy's lost. Everybody knows the fight is fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lied. Everybody got this broken feeling. Like their father or their dog just died. Everybody talking into their pockets. Everybody wants a box of chocolate. Everybody knows.
plague is coming. Everybody knows it's moving fast. Everybody knows that the naked man and woman are just a shining artifact of the past. And everybody knows the scene is dead. There's gonna be a meter on your bed that will disclose what everybody knows. Everybody knows that you're in trouble. Everybody knows what you've been through. From the bloody cross on top of Calvary to the beach at Malibu.
Everybody knows. I know everybody knows. You know everybody knows. We all know everybody knows. To know and to know you know is a good thing, yes. I was just looking at a picture somebody sent me. There's this big gun gathering in Kentucky, a place called Knob Creek. It's the annual Knob Creek Machine Gun Shoot. And people come from all over. All over, lots of different states to come to the thing, and you pays your money, and you get to win and shoot an Uzi and all that sort of thing. And what captured me about this particular thing was this picture of this guy. He's got a backpack on, and he's got a T-shirt that says, "The last person on Earth will carry an assault rifle." The last person on Earth will carry an assault rifle. That's some statement about humanity, isn't it? My. If I felt that way, I don't know. 15,000 people went through the gates at this Knob Creek gun range. They don't keep tabs who comes in. It's a safe haven where guns can change hands without any paperwork. Ammunition is relatively cheap. Buying an old Mauser rifle that would take some red tape cutting in a gun shop is hassle-free at the gun range. This is a place where vendors sell T-shirts that read "The Fourth Reich, Obama, Biden, 2012." And another one that says "Hitler gave great speeches, too." And another one that says "F Obama." They have Adolf Hitler mouse pads that says on them, "Next time, no more Mr. Nice Guy." They sell coffee mugs with Nazi commanders' faces etched on them. The impeach Obama bumper stickers are selling very well. I tell you, and they pay as much as $125 for a short session with an AK-47. They get the fire. Boy, I bet they get their jollies doing that. And they can shoot their own guns for only $20. They're allowed to just shoot all day long at the Knob Hill Machine Gun Shoot. My, it sounds like a good time was had by all. Hey, thanks for joining us here at the program today. Appreciate everybody that joined us, and I want you to know you're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. And don't forget, you heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Later.